Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to IWDM Radio. The program you are about to hear is a community service program on IWDM Radio. Please note, this content is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, legal, professional, or financial counsel or advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts, guests, or agents with IWDM or Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio is not endorsed, sponsored, or certified by any third-party agency. Thank you for listening.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. I seek refuge, protection with Allah from Satan, the rejected enemy. With the name Allah, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. Today is October 15th, the year 2023, and you have tuned in for another session, production of Words My People. I'm your host, Michael Sahir. We'll be right back very shortly after our opening song. And welcome back to Words Made People. I'm your host, Michael Sahir. You're going to get invited to our program today. We're going to continue to follow our usual format. And that format includes reading words from the Holy Quran. You know that this show is titled Words Made People, and the best words, the best collection of words for making human beings are words that are contained in revelation, in the Word of God. Yes, words made people, but the best words, the best collection of words is the words of the Revelation, the Bible, Torah, and the Quran. And we as Muslims understand and make a claim, humbly but quite direct, that our book, the Quran, is the best collection of all the revelations because of its protection from Almighty God, Allah, highly glorified is He. So our reading today is going to be from chapter 4. Chapter 4, verse 135 is going to be our Quran reading for today. So give folks time to go to their bookshelf or get on their tablet or whatever. Look up chapter 4 of the Quran. Quran, chapter 4, verse 135. You know, before reading the Quran, we say two important phrases. We just don't begin reading our book. It's too important of a book. It's too sacred of a text to begin reading. We're not reading the newspaper or magazine. We're reading the words of God. So there's two important phrases that we say before reading the Quran. And the first one is, A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. And that in English rendering is, I seek refuge or protection with Allah, minash shaitan, away from shaitan, nir rajim, the rejected, accursed, open enemy to mankind. Then the second phrase we say before reading the Quran, except for chapter 9, we say, Bismillah ar-Rahim, with the name of God, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. And then we are ready to read. And it says here, Ya ayu elazina aminu, kunu kawamina bilkisti, shuhudan lillahi. And I read the first part of that. It says, in English it says, O you who believe, stand out firmly for justice as witnesses to Allah. As witnesses to Allah. It says, Shuhada lillahi, as witnesses to Allah. It's because it says, Walla Allah asufikum, whether you are witness against yourselves. It says, "As will al-waladin," or a witness against your parents. Or it says, "Wal al-karabina," or your kinfolks, your near kinfolks. If it be against, it says, "In yakun ganiyan," or whether you be a witness against those who are rich. It says, al-fakiran, or you be a witness against the poor. Allah is being very clear and quite specific, direct. It's saying that if you are a believer, you must stand firmly for justice. That's the key words. As a witness to Allah, even as against yourselves, or your parents, or your kin, whether it be against the rich people or the poor people, it says, it tells us why. It says, Falahu Allah bihimma, because Allah can protect all of us, all of them. Allah is the one who is the one to protect everybody involved. So stand for justice. Tell the truth, no matter who it's against, because Allah, as a witness to God, because Allah can protect everybody involved in this conversation. So it says, Fala tatabiyu, and do not follow your hawa. Well, that's the hawa, your desires, your heart. Don't be swayed by your desires, your hawa. Don't let your passion sway you from justice. It says, Sala tatabiun el hawaya, hawa an. He says, unless you, it says, deviate, tatilul, deviate. In other words, you're supposed to be standing for justice. You're supposed to be standing for what's right, regardless of who it is. Because you are standing as a witness for God, for what's right. And it says, and don't follow your desires, otherwise you will deviate, you will swerve, you will go the wrong direction. And Allah says, and if you distort the truth or refrain or hold back the truth. Sometimes you can't swerve from the truth, or sometimes you know the truth. You know what's right, but still you give in. And you just say, I ain't going to say anything because that's my mother or my father, or it's me. So I know what the truth is, so I'm not going to say anything. The Quran says, if you do that, if you say nothing, when you know what is right, Allah says, we are wrong. We are following the desires, the passions of our hawa, our desires. So Allah says, فَإِنَّ اللَّهَ كَانَ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ كَبِيرًا. Allah says, verily Allah is well acquainted with all that you do. So we are given clear instructions, a clear mandate. And it didn't say, oh, you Muslims, or oh, you Christians, said, oh, you who believe. Anybody who believes, we have an obligation to tell the truth, tell the whole truth. This is, again, chapter 4, verse 135 of the Quran. Don't let our passions or, oh, I like this person, you know, or I'm going to favor this person, therefore I'm not going to give true testimony. I'm going to be a false witness because I don't want to hurt their feelings. Or maybe the person is rich. You say, be it someone rich or the poor. They may be rich and powerful. So you say, well, if I tell the truth on the rich and powerful, they may not give me any more favors. Or they may use their power and come back and attack me. So I'm going to just either lie or don't say nothing. And in this case here, not saying anything is like, it's the same as lying. Because they say silence becomes consent. So Allah is telling us we must stand firm upon justice. And that's the key word here, dear people. Stand firm upon what is just, what is right, and just. And that's the key word. It says, Bilkisi, that's saying with or for justice. If we can keep that rule in mind, then we can make a lot of progress in life because Allah is the one best to protect us all. Alhamdulillah, he'll be allowed to me. Yeah, so that's our reading for today of the Quran. And we're going to get into our conversation. Now, after reading the Quran, the Muslim will say, Sadaqallahu al-Azim. Sadaqallah is saying Allah has spoke the truth. But he tells you what kind of truth it is. It's al-Azim. And Azim means the mighty truth. So upon completing reading of the Quran, you say Allah has spoken, and Allah has spoken a mighty truth. Alhamdulillah, he'll be allowed to me. That completes our reading for today for this program. We're going to get into our conversation. I chose a name for, sometimes I choose a title for my production, and I go read it again a day or two later. I say, was that too harsh? Was that too direct? Because sometimes you have to be direct. We're living in serious times, dear people, as we know. And as 8 days ago, it increased, it intensified with Hamas attacking people in Israel. And called situation for us, it has the ramifications, the fallout is going to be very serious. Our program today is to bring a light. We don't want to bring passion. We don't want to bring hate or anger. But we want to bring light to the situation. I have two very important guests coming on today. I had a third person, a local rabbi, but he's not feeling well. So he's not able to join us today. But he did send us his support and his prayers. But I do have two very important guests I'm going to bring on very, very shortly because I know time is of the essence. But I just want to say a few words to kind of set the tone, if we may. And the reason why that I chose that verse from the Quran, because it is an obligation for us to be truthful, to tell the truth, to not hold back from telling the truth. We have to be those who are honest and not pick sides, even if it goes against our own personal selves. This will bring us to, hopefully, a point in life of being, having a resolve in ourselves for truth and to build coalitions of relationships with those of similar minds. So a lot of these ugly, sinful moments in our life we can get past. So we're going to have a conversation today about what happened last Saturday October 7th in Israel. But then we also want to have a conversation on 75 years before that. You cannot differentiate the two. And 2 days before October 7th, on the 5th, that I had lunch with a different rabbi in Indianapolis. You know, we're friends. And we went out for lunch and just caught up with old times, you know, how's the family. And we always exchanged some religious thoughts about what's common in our religion and also what's common in our two languages, the religion, the language of Islam is, and the language of the Jewish people is Hebrew. And there's a lot of similarities of their sister languages. And we just had a typical good conversation, good lunch. Just within 24 hours, all hell, and I mean hell, broke loose with Hamas attacking the people in Israel. And I'm like, my goodness. I was really glad we had the lunch before because we had no idea this was coming. But after it happened, you know, I reached out to various friends, Muslim, Christians, and Jews, and to three rabbis, the two I mentioned plus the third one, and let them know. I said, look, there's nothing in the Quran that supports Hamas, or anybody for that matter, attacking innocent people. I'm not going to spend not even a half a second, trying to defend what is obviously wrong, un-Islamic, what is against the Quran, the spirit of the Quran. It is against the life model of Muhammad the Prophet. There's nothing in his life that supports that. In fact, the truth be told, there are verses in the Quran that speaks directly against attacking innocent people. There's the life model of Muhammad over and over again that speaks against attacking innocent people. So as Muslims, let us keep our book, excuse the phone ringing, I'm sorry. As Muslims, let us be first and foremost in defending wrong. Now we know there's a history behind that. We're going to get into that. But don't convolute the two. If right is right and wrong is wrong. So you don't get the idea we're not here to choose sides in that regard. But we are going to choose each person on their free, independent, conscious mind can come to their conclusion as to what is justice on both sides. So I titled this program, Israeli-Pakistani Saga, Innocent Blood on Guilty Hands. And I emphasize there's innocent blood on both sides of the equation and guilty hands on both sides of the equation. So I just want to just say that first. We're not going to sugarcoat anything, but we're not going to bring, if anybody who calls it a day, call them any hate or anger in their voice, then I'm going to cut you off. If you begin name calling and making comments that will not help, I'm going to give up. I'm going to cut you off, okay? You've been told. I may say it again for those who call in later. Our show today is to have an honest conversation. You can bring your passion. You can bring your commitment. We want to hear that. But don't bring hatred. Don't bring violence. Don't bring none of that. I will cut you off. This is Words Made People. And we're here to build understanding. And so if you on one side or the other, that's okay. But don't bring any hate. Okay, we're going to get into our conversation. I'm going to bring on first, because her schedule is a little bit shorter today, Dr. Mary Ann Faday. She's a local resident of Indianapolis, Indiana. I've known her for, I don't know, I lost track, Sister Marianne. Sister Marianne, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu.
Yeah, welcome to Words Made People.
Thank you.
Just for the benefit of our listening audience, to keep in mind these shows are archived like forever. So if someone may tune in next year and hear this program, just give us a 5-second, 10-second thumbnail as to who is Mary Ann today.
Well, that's quick. I've got a PhD in Arabic and Islamic studies. I had traveled to the Middle East, fact-finding mission back in 2001, summer of 2001 with the Fellowship of Reconciliation. Saw some tragic things and learned a lot of things that really shocked me. Foremost was the fact that Americans were being lied to. They weren't being given the truth about what was going on over there. And the group of us who were there as delegates, I have to say that after we saw both sides and we visited, spent a night having dinner and spent the night with a Jewish family, a rabbi, I believe, and another family was Palestinian. And so we went to met settlers, met peace advocates on both sides. We just saw the whole range aspect Israeli society and Palestinian mm-hmm. society. I have to say that afterwards, I think every one of us came away with sympathy for the Palestinians when we saw what kind of life that they were put under, and the stress and the trauma and the breaking of international law constantly. I know how the Jews must have felt in Nazi Germany, because that's how I sensed, I was feeling, even though I'm not Palestinian, but I sensed that for the people of Palestine as well. And God bless the peace advocates on both sides. There was an organization where the parents on both sides had lost children, and they came together. Mm-hmm. And I was really touched by that, because I think the worst nightmare of a parent is to lose a child, and mm-hmm. both sides had lost children. So they instead of fueling hatred and vengeance, they wanted to come together and grieve and try to find a way to promote peace. And I really applaud them for that, and all peacemakers, because it's a hard thing to do when your emotions may tell you otherwise, but it's the higher path. Yeah. And there's no religion that would accept killing people, and no, all true believers should really unite to condemn these atrocities on both sides, because for over 50 years now, the Palestinians have been living in almost squalor, especially on the west, mm-hmm. in Gaza. I saw a terrible situation there. I mean, people had next to nothing, and yet they were so gracious and hospitable with their kindness and behavior and just patience and resilience. I was amazed. I saw people who whose home were surrounded by settlers, and they were beaten and everything just for wanting to add a bedroom to their home.
Wow.
And the sprinkling system of the old man, the patriarch of the family, it had a little garden. They tore it up. I mean, they just beat up his wife, she was an older woman. I mean, I just could not believe, of course they beat up the younger ones too, but I just couldn't believe people could be that insensitive, because they were just peacefully living their lives. They didn't bother the settlers at all, and yet the settlers just wanted them out and was doing everything they could to harass them, and Amnesty International had documented all of that. So I was really shocked that the U.S. is
right now
blind. Blind.
Go ahead, sorry.
I'm sorry, did you say something I didn't get? Yes?
No, I just wanted to clarify, when you say the settlers, you're referring to the Jewish settlers?
Yes, they had surrounded, they were surrounding the home of these couple of Palestinians. I think other people had just fled, I'm not sure, but they were trying to stay in their home. and they were being harassed daily.
Yes, yes. Yes, you know, the incident that happened last Saturday, it shocked the world, be honest about it, you know, for so many reasons, because Israel is known to have one of the better security systems in the world, and it's just caught everyone totally off guard. What came to your mind, knowing your history of your travel in that region, what came to your mind when you first heard the reports from last Saturday on the 7th of October?
I was absolutely shocked. I mean, it was a terrible thing that was done. I definitely condemn that. I mean, anyone who is a believer would condemn that.
Right.
But I just thought it was rather suspicious, frankly, that they were able to get in like that, because Israel has a barricade like no other. The walls they put up, the barricades, I've lost count of how many, over 600 barricades, their lives of pure hell, standing in line constantly to go somewhere, to even to your own farmlands. They have a wall built between the home and their homes and their vineyards and olive groves, and it's just
described their wall for us.
It's horrible, but this surprised me.
Yeah, Ken, can you describe the wall? When I was there in 2008 with the interfaith team, you know, going from Jerusalem to Bethlehem, I saw cement walls. Of course, I didn't measure them, but they had to be every bit of two stories tall, if not taller, 25 feet tall cement walls. Well, are those the same kind of barriers that you were referring to?
Well, that's one of the barriers. Others are mounds. Others are gates and crossings and all sorts of barriers. We had a hard time. We had to wait to go through some of them, checkpoints as well. And since we were a group of, you know, Americans, they let us through, but I could see how the Palestinians were in another queue and just waiting sometimes hours to get through. And they try to wear them down, basically.
Yes. Yes.
Prevent much movement within their own territories.
Well, I witnessed the same thing in 2008, and they did us the same way, but they still were Americans. They kind of gave us a little pass. We still had to go through that turnstile, that metal turnstile, but they were not, they didn't ask us for ID or anything. But the Palestinians, each, and they were going to work or from work, they had to show their ID. At this point here, I want to bring on my other guest, Leif Carlson. Dick Carlson, I'll let him introduce himself. But he too has had experiences there in that region. Leif, welcome to Words Made People.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, it's my honor. Can you give us a thumbnail picture of who you are, so as they hear you speak, they can have a better understanding of who they're listening to?
Well, thank you for having me. Yeah, so my first exposure to essentially the conflict was I was part of a college program the summer of 2000, going to do something completely unrelated, but in Israel, doing underwater archaeology for the summer. And I returned, you know, we did the typical tours that Westerners do, where we, you know, take the bus into Bethlehem to go buy olive wood and then return. But that was like the only real exposure to the West Bank for me that summer. And I got home about 2 weeks before the second intifada began. And I was, to be honest, I was completely ignorant of the conflict. But I was really mesmerized and, you know, obviously devastated by what I was seeing in the news. But also just really wanting to learn as much as I possibly could. So that kind of began my, you know, my journey to studying the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. I started studying Arabic the next year at a university where I lived at the time in Fargo, North Dakota, and then began applying to graduate programs. And the next year I started a master's in peace and justice at Earlham School of Religion in Richmond, Indiana. It's a Quaker school where I was able to study kind of like almost like an independent study with my master's to focus on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. was there for 3 years, and then in 2005 I graduated, and that summer I went and lived in the West Bank in Bethlehem. It was through a partnership program, an organization in Bethlehem called Holy Land Trust, and they put you with a family to live as host family for the summer. You have an internship, and I was interning at WIAM, which is the Palestinian Conflict Resolution Center, also in Bethlehem. And then, traveling all the time, seeing things for ourselves, just kind of witnessing what life was like on the ground for Palestinians. And then we were also studying Arabic as well at a local university. And then that summer, I was fortunate to be selected as one of the four of us who were invited into Gaza. It was the way it worked then. I have since understand that now it's next to impossible for internationals, unless you actually are an employee of an aid organization. It's very hard to get to go into Gaza. But at the time, the only way one could go was you had to be invited by an existing aid organization who already had a presence on the ground in Gaza. And the organization that I went through was an organization called Norwegian People's Aid, and they're an international granting organization, and they were, giving out grant money to lots of different NGOs within the Gaza Strip. And so for the week that I was there, kind of my role was to help with, there was a youth kind of summit, a camp for, and when they say youth in Palestine, I'm sure, and it's very true for a lot of other Arab countries as well, youth is basically anything up through like essentially even mid-20s. And so a lot of the youth I was working with were college-aged youth. And it was all about civic responsibility, importance of volunteerism, things like that. And then also to help the NGO, help Norwegian People's Aid with their sort of grant compliance work, where we would travel around to the different organizations that they were helping fund, and just making sure that there was compliance with how the money was being used and things like that. But all along, what we're really doing is, again, witnessing what life was like on the ground for Palestinians in Gaza. And of course, got to see a lot of, both, like what Marianne said, just a lot of horrible things, but also met some of those amazingly wonderful people who, I will just say, I can't imagine my life not having done that 1 week experience in Gaza. It has completely defined my worldview. And so, it's pretty remarkable to look back at that and to think about how, I can't imagine my life not having done that, and then in 2008, I was invited to come back to Palestine to co-lead that summer experience for other, students essentially coming over. So I was a co-leader that summer as well. But Gaza was not available at that time for us to go and see that. So, yeah.
Why not? Why was Gaza not available in 2008?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we talked about that. I think we might have overlapped because you also had visited, I think, Holy Land Trust when you were on that delegation, correct?
We went to Mary Bethlehem, and we began in Jordan, building a house of Habitat for Humanity, and went down to Jordan, the southern Jordan, across the Dead Sea into Israel, or Jerusalem, I should say, and then across next to Jerusalem is Bethlehem. And we were there with an interfaith group, about 15 of us. And there was a rabbi in the group. As a matter of fact, I see my rabbi friend's number has lit up, so he will be able to join us. But I was there in 2008, but we did not go nowhere near. We were mainly in Jerusalem, the old city, and in Bethlehem.
Yeah.
But there was a contradiction between Bethlehem, where the Palestinians are, compared this to their senior wall. And this is my personal expression, because I served as a chaplain for years at a local prison in Indiana, and the walls were the same kind of walls around the prison in Indiana, were very similar to the walls they divided Bethlehem from Jerusalem. So
right.
Yes, and it was quite revealing, as I was telling some of our youth today, trying to get a, I think a pulse of where their mind was. And on top of the houses of Palestinians, it was a big, big tub, like a big vat to hold hundreds of gallons of water. What are those things on the house? And they said, oh, that is their water tank. Once a month, the Israelis bring their water. And if there was more, if they ran out of water before the month was over with, it was shame on them. So, but I do see my friend, my rabbi friend, Lou Weiss, he's not feeling the best, but he's going to try and speak with us for a while. I'd love to bring him on this moment, and then we can open up for a conversation with everyone. Is my friend, Rabbi Lou Weiss. How you doing, sir?
Pretty good, Mikhail. Thank you very much. I just wanted to get on for a second. I'm not talking too well or anything like that, but I appreciate what you're doing. I thank you for that. And your speakers, I just wanted to say that I hope we can treat each other with love and respect and, you know, to care for each other and together for peace and justice. There's so many things in this world I don't understand. But I think we have to hold on to hope, and that's what I'm hanging on to. I work with some of these organizations, Rabbis for Human Rights, and the friends and families of combatants that Marianne, I think, was talking about, maybe, and Peace Now and Trua, which is another concern about human rights of all people. And that's what
yes,
I want
sir.
To speak for now.
I know you can't speak much, but I do want to ask, when you hear the news October 7th of the Hamas attacking the Israelis, what went through your mind?
Well, I have to admit, this whole time, I've been dealing with COVID and on medicine for that, so I haven't been very aware of things. But all I can say is shock and disbelief. I mean, I understand there's a history there. I am sorry for that history. But I also can't believe that people can do these kind of things particularly to you know, people who are at a peace concert, and I've been to many of them, people in shelters, families with elderly. It's just beyond my belief and understanding. I guess that's all I can say.
Yes, sir. Before you go, help me and my listening audience to understand. Because we hear terms, then we hear Jew, then we hear Jewish, then we hear Zionist. All one and the same, or is there a difference?
Wow, and I don't want to get into too much because it's like everything, it's very complicated. There are Jews who are not Zionist. The majority of Jews probably are Zionist. I consider myself maybe a progressive liberal Zionist. I think of the times of Martin Buber and Ernst Simon and Ehud, which worked for, had a hope that there could be a Palestinian, back then they used the term more just Arab or Muslim. I don't think they understood completely, but that's the, my hope and belief is that you can have a progressive Middle East where people work together for everybody's benefit. And that's where
okay.
I am. Again, it's very complex. There are organizations that don't believe in Zionism. That's not where I am right now. I'm not sure.
Right.
This is where I am. I think everybody has a right to that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Now, I'm just curious, if you were to put in a few words to define the word Zionist, what would you say in just a few words?
Well, originally I kind of saw it as the, the National Liberation Movement of the Jewish people. But I also do believe in some way that the Jewish people have a historical connections with the Promised Land, the Holy Land, whatever we want to call it. And I don't think it's the way it is now. It's not that connection, I don't think. But I think there is a historical connection there, and there is a right there. But, I think it's based on, in my opinion, love and concern for one another. And that was the original idea of Zionism. I mean, it was socialism. It was concern, and a lot of that has changed, certainly under the current government of Israel. And that's what concerns me greatly.
Yes, sir. Okay, but I'm going to leave your mic open. I don't want to overwork you because you're trying to deal with your health. But I'm going to leave your mic open. You can put your own phone on mute in case you want to come back in later on. You okay
well,
for you?
I appreciate that. I can't say how much I can stay on because I don't control my body very well right now. Appreciate our being friends and working together, and you've talked about our trip many years ago under an interfaith organization of Muslim, Jewish, Christian to Jordan and building a home for a Palestinian cab driver and working with refugees, Iraqi refugees, and going into Palestine, going into Israel, working with, meeting with some progressive Israeli organizations that are concerned about Palestinian rights and freedom. So I thought that was so exciting and so meaningful. I wish we could do it again. I wish I was in a condition to do that again. I hope we can.
Yes.
We even wanted to go into Syria, of all places, and which would maybe have been dangerous. I don't know, but I mean, danger of human life. But that was such a great experience for me, and I think it made a difference in the world. Yeah, I might be naive, but I think it made a difference.
Yes, me too. I definitely hope so. Okay, so I'm gonna leave your phone line open. You can put your phone on mute, and you can come in as you need to come in. Mary Ann, Rabbi Lou Weiss, he mentioned something that you similar to what you said. There's a lot of good organizations, activity going on. You mentioned about the mothers who have both lost Israeli and Palestinian mothers who united. Those things tend not to make the news. There's a lot of things that go on in the area that don't make the news. What are your thoughts on that? Why are those things not making, those good things not making the news?
It's intentional, I'm afraid. many years ago when I was a graduate student and I worked in the part-time work in the Office of Middle Eastern Studies program. I was the outreach coordinator, and we held lots of programs, brought in speakers, mostly cultural things, speakers on Middle Eastern culture, but at times it got into politics, especially when there was some drama in the Middle East. And a survey came to my desk, and I don't remember who conducted the survey, but it was anonymous. And and this would be the early 80s, they had surveyed all the broadcasting stations around the country and asked for an anonymous answer so no one, they could say what they wanted, no one would know who they are. And every one of them, not one without any exception, which really startled me, every one of them said that if the news was favorable to Israel, they would broadcast it or publish it, and if it was not, withheld it, and just the opposite for the Palestinians. Anything positive or favorable to the Palestinians, they withheld, and anything negative, they broadcast. And so I realized that over these decades, they have been grooming public opinion, or you know, in such a way that you don't hear much when Israelis kill, torture, and maim Palestinians. In fact, one little young man was just killed a few days ago, and before October 7th, and he was shot, and he was just maybe 14 years old, shot in the neck, paralyzed from the neck down, and then later died. And he was just standing around. He hadn't done anything. He was just a civilian in a group of people, and they just indiscriminately shot at him. This is the reason why most Americans feel that the Palestinians are terrorists. But I wish people would practice the golden rule, because you should walk a mile in their shoes, or even one day be in their shoes. No Israeli could tolerate what's being done to them. And the irony is they want peace, but the Israelis don't want peace. And they keep making an excuse, which is not true, that there's no legitimate partner on the other side, but that they themselves don't want peace. They made peace with Egypt, but they refuse to make peace with, you know, Syria and Palestinians.
Now, on that survey, it was anonymous on the part of the station. Again, how many stations were on the survey, and were these only American stations, or was these stations from around the world?
No, these were just American, U.S. I don't recall the number. I don't recall at all. I mean, it was a good number, but I would guess 100 at most.
Okay.
But I don't recall at all. It's been that long. They all said the same thing, and that's what was sad and, I mean, shocking, really, because we're supposed to have freedom of speech, but obviously that's not the case.
Right. Yes. Lee, for any observations you want to make at this time, because there's so much to cover, and I want to get further into it, but I want to hear from you as well.
No, I think I agree with everything that's been said, and you know, one of the things that kind of struck me in the last week, just like what Marion was saying about, you know, kind of the media representation, you know, because the 7th was a Saturday, and I had to wait until Monday before I started seeing any of kind of the news sources that I trust were able to start covering it, because they don't operate on the weekends. So all weekend long, you know, just being inundated with media that was very slanted, only really showing one side. And, you know, obviously I was really devastated by the news, but I wanted kind of more of an unbiased sort of perspective, and I was really relying on some of those sources. So I was eagerly waiting Monday for when I could start to, you know, see some, you know, more from the Palestinian perspective. It's really tough. Whereas, you know, like my question has always been like, where has the media been for the last, you know, well, even just talking specifically about Gaza, where have they been for the last 16 years during the blockade? Where have they been? You know, it just, I always wonder that, but you know, Marion's comment really answers the question. And that is that if it's not coming from a particular perspective, they're not going to cover it. I echo what everyone's been saying.
Let's say expand it, because I would give my personal perspective. And I really like President Joe Biden. I voted for him last time. I probably vote for him again. I was highly let down by his response. And the main reason was, I guess, waiting for the balance. I didn't hear him get the balance. You know, it was the Jewish people, yes, that they were hurt by the attack. And that's understood. And a mile from wrong. Just like, Mr. Joe Biden, you should balance. There are Palestinian babies killed. There were Palestinian old women killed as well. But it's kind of like closing the eye and saying Israel go in there and get killed. And just like we read that verse from the Quran, you can't let one wrong make you do another. So getting beyond the media on our political landscape, I found it quite difficult to hear from many of our politicians across the spectrum, pretty much. Not all, but what,
yeah.
What's your take on that? That's the question to both of you, both Elise and Marianne.
If you don't mind, I'll just share something really quickly about that. I agree with you completely. I will say, though, I was not surprised from the response from the president. I've always been really kind of critical of his. He's been very vocal. I remember in 2008 when he was still in consideration for, he was running against, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, and he was being interviewed and he was bragging about being a Christian Zionist into the interviewer. And he kept talking about, you don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. You know that, right? And he kept saying that. And so I at that time started doing some digging, and I was in Palestine that summer when all the kind of primary stuff was going on. And, I was really watching what he was saying and going back and looking at his record, and he's very staunchly Christian Zionist. So I wasn't surprised. I think what stunned me more in his speech was that no one on his team thought to really vet the information that he was going to be using as a justification for supporting Israel in this situation. They were quoting things, atrocities that happened on the 7th that now we believe in the international community never happened, and that they was using in a sense as a justification for our support. To me, it's kind of like whenever you see like a courtroom drama and somebody on the stand says something, and they always, the judge might say, oh, we want that stricken from the record. Jury, please disregard what, this witness has just said. I always wonder, how are they supposed to not remember what was just said? And I felt that way, like when this kind of misinformation is being spread, and it's being spread from, essentially one of the most powerful people in the world, it's really hard to walk that back, even if there's no information to support that. So I was really more surprised by that there was really little regard for seeking out truth, and just saying kind of anything they've been hearing on social media. I just kind of expected more, So that's just what I want to say.
Yeah, the media, yes. Marianne, what are your thoughts about the reaction from our politicians to October 7th?
Well, I was horrified because there's no nuanced approach to politics anymore. Everything is handled with war and weapons instead of diplomacy. They don't bother to find out the circumstances. They just go right in and, like cowboys, almost just shooting up whatever. They want to send all the weapons. And I just read on, watched the program, the news a couple of days ago, and I think it was NPR or PBS that they put on a comment after the segment, as they normally do, and it's that this year alone, Israel has received $153 billion in aid. And most of that, $153 billion has gone to Israel in this year alone. And most of it goes, and there's no accountability. They can spend it however they like. And a lot of times, technically Israel does not qualify for our foreign aid because of their GDP, but it's against the law according to our own regulations. No other country with their GDP of Israel's GDP would qualify for foreign aid, and yet they're getting all this. So the bias is just unbelievable, and I'm just shocked and saddened by the fact that nobody bothers to do any investigating before they decide who is the guilty party. And yes, it sounds obvious that Hamas and whoever they were somehow got in. Maybe they were, as I say, I was really suspicious about how they easily could get in. It seems very strange, but But what they did was horrendous, and everyone should condemn it. But we should also condemn what Israel has been doing for the last 50, 60 years. And the U.S. is not an honest broker. If they were, they would have stopped this way back in 1967, but they chose not to. And so it's just escalated. And all the settlements that keep being built, they're, you know, it's against the law, but they don't, they turn a blind eye to whatever they do. So I'm really saddened because I had a Jewish friend in grad school, and she was a history major. And we were talking about something, maybe some flare up in the Middle East. So I was asking her what she thought. And she told me, and she was an American Jewish of Russian and East European background. And she told me that her grandmother had lived in Palestine peacefully with everyone before the Nazi persecution and before all the European Jews started coming to Israel. And when she told them, her grandmother said to her, and she said to the incoming Jews who were creating havoc, she said, "We lived in peace until you showed up." And it's really true, because there were some very sad stories of very nice Palestinians who welcomed them because they realized they'd been persecuted, welcomed them. These were Christian Palestinians at the time, welcomed them to, and they actually had prepared a feast for them so that when they came, they would see that these people are not against them. Well, those Jewish people who showed up said to them, "Can you go out for a picnic for a few days and let us," I don't know what the excuse they made, but they asked them if they would just can spend some time in their vineyards and whatever and do, you know, just relax, enjoy themselves. I mean, I really don't know what kind of excuse you could give someone to say, "Would you please leave for a week?" But they did it, and they came back and found their homes occupied. So, yes. You know, there are lots of sad stories on both sides, but there are a lot of good people who want peace, and it's just the powers that be and the governments that really are supporting that, I believe. Yes. I met a lot of good Israelis, as well as wonderful Palestinians, just wonderful people who really wanted peace and were not allowed to have it, to live in peace.
Yeah, and then, let me just say, because I had two calls on hold. They've been on hold for a while. Leaf, go ahead and make your comment. Then I'm
I was just going to add one last thing about the politician side of it, too. That was something else that I read in a report this week that I found to be really troubling as well, and that is in the last week, stocks in military corporations have gone up, you know, exponentially, right? Because when there's war, their profits, you know, everyone sees this is a good investment. And the reports are is that there is still no regulation on United States politicians' ability to invest. These are people who are sometimes on committees that know this information ahead of time, and they're able to invest in these you know, war profiteering companies. In my opinion, they have no political but also no financial reason to want there to be peace, because they are going to be making money off of conflict. And so that, to me, is really, really troubling, you know, when people who are supposed to be making, you know, regulations and that are really essentially affecting global policy have the ability to profit off of war, then there's no real reason for them to want peace.
So what you're saying, just to reiterate, we have U.S. politicians who give, like, insider trade information. You can put it another way. That
yes.
The war is coming, and these same politicians are investing in weaponry, bombs and bullets, because they know that their investment is going to have a substantial return.
Yes.
And that is very troubling, because the consequences is the killing of the innocent. That's the title of this program today, Innocent Blood on Guilty Hands, and you have expanded the conversation. Dear listener, I'm going to get to my calls. I had a couple of calls. I had to my first caller here, please. Caller from 818. Thanks for calling Words Made People. Can you give us your first name and your city and your question or comment, please? 818-400. You're on. Okay, we're going to put them back on hold and go to our next caller. Okay, a caller here from 773-414. Thanks for calling Works Made People. Can you give us your first name and your city?
Assalamu alaikum. This is Brother Bashir from Chicago.
Yes, welcome
to our guests. Yeah, welcome to our guests. And I appreciate their observations in this situation. And as you pointed out, Imam Sahir, we want to be just in this situation. Allah guides us to be just, in a situation like this, and even if we have to accuse our own self, to be just. And I think that's what the essence of this situation that has existed since 1948.
Yes,
in Palestine is about justice. But I was recently reading in Quran, and as the sister talked about, and many people who have visited Israel in that situation talk about the injustices that are done to the Palestinian people. And I was recently reading in the Quran, and the Quran, and this particular verse from the Quran is addressing the Jews. But as we understand, Allah, when he points out errors that people have made in the past, it's a lesson for all of us. And although this was addressing the Jews, it was also addressing humanity not to make those same errors and those same mistakes. So just briefly, this is from Surah the Heights, Al-Afra, 157 and 158. I'll try and be short. So now the mercy has been assigned to those who follow the messenger, the only prophet whose mention they shall find in the Torah and the gospel.
I'm sorry, but you're breaking up. Brother Bashir, when you begin reading the Quran verse, your phone begins to break up. So if you can repeat the chapter number and verse again, if you can.
Okay, can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
I can't now, but you were very clear until you began reading the Quran verse, and then your phone began to break up. Go ahead, please.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So this is from Surah 7, the Heights, Al-Arab, 157 and 158. So now mercy has been assigned to those who follow the messenger, the only prophet, whose mention they shall find in the Torah and the gospel with them. He enjoins them to follow virtue and forbids them from evil. He makes pure things lawful for them and impure things unlawful. Now I want to go to the commentary. And this is from Maududi's translation. And here he says, here the use of the word Ummi for the Holy Prophet is very significant. This title was used to break the national pride and arrogance of the Jews, who called non-Jews Ummis or Gentiles. In this respect, they were so arrogant that as a nation, not to speak of acknowledging a Ummi as the leader, they were not ready even to concede basic human rights to the Gentiles. They asserted, we are not to be called to account for our behavior toward the Gentiles. So as the our guest has pointed out, some of the atrocities we see happening to the Palestinians from the Jewish government there, it goes back to what Allah has pointed out and warned us. He pointed out to you, but it's a warning to all humanity, is when they take on this kind of thinking and this kind of attitude, they can do these type of atrocities, not only the Jews, the Muslims, the Christians, and others. If we don't follow the correct guidance, then we cause problems for ourselves and problems for others. And
yes,
I think it's very significant. The brother pointed out that Biden said he was a Christian Zionist.
Yes.
That's significant. And also the sister that pointed out that they didn't have a problem, the woman told, they didn't have a problem until the Nazi Jews came. Imam Wardi Muhammad pointed out to us, he made this observation, that he felt the atrocities that this government was put on was because of the situation they experienced under the Nazis. And they were using that same kind of mentality on the Palestinians. And there's a situation where if somebody grows up in an abusive family, they may be abusive. That's not like.
Yes. Like my son, they say, yeah, hurt people tend to hurt people. Now, you made one comment, Brother Bashir, that you said the Nazi Jews, and I think he was referring to the Jews that were abused by the Nazis. I think that's what you meant to say.
Yes.
I just wanted to clarify that. Mary Ann or Leif, and also Lou, if you want, whenever you want to comment, you can unmute yourself. Do you have any comments on what Bashir just said?
I would just say, thank you, obviously, for that perspective. It's a challenging time, for many, many people. And I think to be pursuing other people's perspectives is really important right now. So,
Very
I would
important.
Like to say that normally translated as illiterate, the illiterate prophet, because he had never been taught to read and write. And so it was emphasized that he could not have made up the Quran, for example, because he was illiterate. And I've never heard it translated as prophet, but it's the, illiterate. Ummi means he is unschooled. So he was very intelligent, didn't have, what you say, book learning, so to speak. But the Quran was a revelation that came to him. So that's why it was emphasized that he was illiterate, because people had accused him of making it up. But I'd never heard the other definition that caller used.
Yeah. Okay, great. Okay, Brother Bashir, thank you very much. You're going to go to our next caller here. Caller, I'm going to try this 818 number a second time. Caller from 818-400, you're on Words Made People. You have a question or comment, please. Okay. Go to our next caller here from 856. 856-718, thank you for calling Words Made People. Can you give us your first name, your city, and your question or comment, please?
I'll comment. My name is Latana Ali. I'm from New Jersey.
Yes, ma'am.
I just read recently that Walikum Islam, and I know it to be a fact also, because I did some work for some people who had told me that they wanted their Jewish name back because their grandfather had changed their name to avoid dictation during the Nazi regime. So we know that there were some Jews that went into the army of Hitler's army. Okay, so we know that. But when we look at what happened in America, and then we look at what happened in Germany, and we're looking at what happened in Israel, it's all the same kind of scenario. Boy, the weaker ones, huh? Okay, thank you. Assalamualaikum.
Thank you, Sister Satana. Anyone have a comment on what she shared?
Well, we do tend to create wars and start wars, and support wars. We're not the light on the hill that we thought we were. And it saddens me because I love this country and I love what it stood for originally. I'm sorry that it has lost its way, its moral compass. If it had one, is definitely not in service now. Everything is about money and exploiting others. And it's sad because there's so many good people in this country who are naive politically, don't realize what our government is doing. And if we could just have our country back and have maybe term limits so we wouldn't have career politicians who would keep dictating the same policies and have a change of leadership more often, then I think we might be able to prevent further catastrophes in the world. And there are so many, not just the Palestinian issue, but around the world there are just so many refugees that have been created, some by the global warming, some by our policies in past decades in the South America, for example. And if we would just do the right thing and practice the golden rule and realize that we are all given, blessed with the divine in us, everybody has that. Maybe some of us, many of us don't see it, don't act like it, but it's there. And if we would just treat people with kindness and respect, and that goes for the police in our country toward especially black people, but in general, if we would just do the right thing, try to be civil, know that you can't love God without loving his creation, and we're all part of his creation. And that means human beings as well as animals and plants, and just be respectful, just take what you need, don't exploit the land. If we all just did that, it would be a tremendous, it would be almost like a paradise. If we could just live and let live and help people in need. During COVID and two, three years back, even nature was being restored because we weren't running around like crazy people and driving and flying and this and that, and nature was able to come back. We can restore nature, we can restore people if we would just make the effort. And believe me, in doing so, we would be happy, because I can't think of a happier thing for someone than knowing that you have made a positive difference in the life of someone else, even if you don't know that person. We've lost that light in us. We're forgetting the light in us. And many of us, thank God, there are many people who are doing the right thing. And I know that there are people concerned about the environment, people concerned about children in war zones. I mean, there are just so many wonderful organizations, but we need in this country to just realize that we have to make a change in our policies. We can't be condemning everybody and going to war with everybody. We need to diplomacy and self-respect become the norm, because we're always talking about our national interests, but we don't care about anyone else's national interests, apparently. We don't respect other people, especially if they're not Westerners. And this is the sad thing, because we have a lot to learn from these people. They have wonderful cultures and traditions. Mm-hmm. I learned so much when I was in the Middle East. I was really wishing that, you know, we had that here, because the societies were healthier. I'm talking about vis-a-vis children and their families. Children were safer in the families. I mean, they were, of course, there was trauma, but outside. But the love and the close-knitness of the families in the Middle East is something amazing to see and wonderful. And I know we were like that, and we're still like that, many of us, but not as much as before. And that's what's sad. But in general, I just think if we followed the golden rule, that we would be blessing everyone and we would be blessed ourselves.
Thank you very much. Very well said. Lisa, any comments? I have a question I want
to
ask.
Something to what the caller had brought up, just like kind of the idea of a pattern, right? That this what had happened to the horribleness of the Holocaust and what happened to Jewish people and others who are marginalized, kind of repeating itself, right, and seeing similar patterns, mm-hmm. even what's going on with the Palestinians. Something that I really was thinking about was this idea of nonviolence, right, and the kind of the benefits of nonviolence, but specifically for thinking about the Jewish narrative, that for a people who have been so affected by violence, right, and whose story is connected to violence, that unfortunately by now kind of perpetuating a kind of, I don't know, just the collective violence that's being perpetrated against Palestinians. In a way, what's happening is they're kind of still married to this narrative of violence. And I think that a nonviolent mm-hmm. response would help to liberate themselves from that narrative, and that it, mm-hmm. it shouldn't be coming from an external sort of pressure. This shouldn't be a mandate that some other country or agency is telling you must, choose nonviolence or you must stop, but something within themselves to seek within themselves, yeah. and find yeah. that nonviolence is the way to liberate themselves. And it's for all of us, not just for the Jewish people, but and for mm-hmm. Israelis, but just in general. But for sure, thinking about their narrative of, what happened to them as sort of being the victims of violence, and now unfortunately being, kind of perpetrators of it. It's really sad to me. So I was just thinking about the role of nonviolence and how it's not just yes. passivity, but it's seeking liberation within ourselves.
Yes, you make a good point. We have a very good model of that, of the African American struggle in the USA of nonviolence. And the benefits that came from that. And I noticed when I was in Bethlehem, on their walls, even the walls inside of some of their buildings on the staircase, I was really happily surprised to see how many quotes they had of African-American leaders. Dr. King and others. I was like, the Palestinians have been studying the African-American struggle. I was happy. I'm really, myself being African-American. But the question I want to ask, if my callers, please be patient. Now, we'll get to my callers, so please be patient. The question I want to ask is, what was going through, I know this is, you can't give a direct answer, but what could have been going through the minds of Hamas to have planned such an atrocious attack, knowing the vengeance that Israel can have in the past? Hamas had to have calculated that it's going to cause them to lose it's apparently that they're going to lose other babies, their own mothers. What was going through their mind when they made that attack, knowing that Israel controls the waterway, their utilities?
Yeah.
Their food supply, medical supply. What could have been going through their mind? Because we know Hamas in 2006 was a properly democratically elected body by the
right.
people.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's important to point out, that I think a lot of people in America who don't really follow this issue, they kind of just tune in when something like this happens, who aren't aware that, Hamas was elected. And the reason why Hamas was chosen over Fatah in Gaza specifically was that Gazans saw Fatah as being financially corrupt, that they were a lot of the aid money coming in was being kind of embezzled and being, kept for those at the top. And so Gazans were sick of it. And so they saw Hamas as another option. Unfortunately, Hamas, though, has never held another election since. And they don't really, democracy has failed in Gaza. So yes, they were elected, but, they're not looking to leave anytime soon. I don't know if I have an answer to your question, what was going through their mind. Obviously, I'm not a member of Hamas. Nor do I agree with what they did. But I have to think that when a people, a marginalized people, are left in a state of despair for as long as, let's say, you know, the Gazans have been in this open air prison, right? That, you know, I try to remind people when people hear the Gaza Strip, I don't even know if they know what the size of the land is. It's you know, it's less than half the size of Marion County, and it has 2.2 to 2.5 million people, depending on the census, living in this space, right? So this is one of the most densely populated areas on planet Earth, and where they have no control over, like you said, resources. And I think that's, for me, it was one of my biggest lessons I had to learn when I was there in 2005, because I had just come out of this master's program specifically looking at kind of the religious implications of this conflict. And I was there on the ground, and I was really learning how much kind of I didn't know what I didn't know, you know what I mean? And what I realized was this is really a political conflict. This is about control of resources. This is about control of land and water. And the way I saw it, and the way I look at it more so now, is that religion has been hijacked on all sides as a way of drawing a line in the sand and determining which side of the conflict you will support. And to me, this is really about land and water. And you can see that in the West Bank. You can see that in Gaza, where you have the wall. And if you were able to fly a drone up and look down at both simultaneously, you would see arid, dry, like you said, there's only water cisterns on the roofs of these buildings, because many people, the only way they have access to water is what they can collect during the rainy season, because Israel shut the water off. And then directly opposite of the wall, you will have lush green golf courses with fountains flowing with water, right? So it's not as if this is an arid region where no one has water. It's being shut off. And so when you have people who have been...
Can you give us a little bit more details? The side of the wall with the luscious green, that's the Israeli side.
That's correct. Yes. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. So the Israeli side, they'll have these lush, green, lavish estates, and they'll have these, you know, sometimes country clubs, like literally going right up against the wall. And then directly opposite, you'll have these really, really economically devastated areas where they have no control over the resources. And they'll have the, you know, electricity turn off at with no notice. They'll have water turned off at no notice, no access to health care. They have no freedom of movement to go to a hospital. Sometimes the ambulances are bombed, you know. So, it's just I think about it as when you ask the question, what was going through Hamas's mind? I think they must have known, obviously, there was going to be collective punishment. I think it's too simple to say that they have no regard for their fellow Gazans. I think it was probably a calculated decision, and I think what it was to collect as many hostages as possible. When you think about what happened, what was it, a couple of years ago when Hamas had kidnapped one Israeli soldier, and they were able to trade for that one Israeli soldier, I think it was 11,000 Palestinian political prisoners, okay?
Yeah.
So you see the complete, you know, imbalance of human life from the Israeli perspective, that they value this many Palestinians for one Israeli life. I think what their goal was, get as many hostages as possible to try to trade for the 11,000 Palestinian political prisoners, including women and children who have been held without trial, right, for years. So I think it was a calculated decision. I think they knew there was going to be retaliation. I suspect they even were thinking that if it was bad enough that the international community, I don't mean the West, but some of the other Arab states and other countries that support their situation would intervene. I don't know. I think for them it's a risk worth taking in order to achieve something. I don't agree with their stance. I don't agree that for them the only solution is the destruction of Israel and destruction of the Jewish people. I think that's a horrific mission statement. But, you know, I think if when diplomacy fails and you leave people in that state of despair for that long, this is where we end up, unfortunately.
Yes. Thank you very much. Marianne, what do you think was going through Hamas's mind? Well, they knew the retribution was going to be quite severe.
First of all, do we know that Hamas did it? I mean, did they come out and say that? Because I haven't heard that.
Fair question.
So yeah, I don't
yeah,
know.
We've been told
I don't
it.
Know who,
mm-hmm.
I don't know who did it, but it's appalling whoever did it. And I sympathize with all the grieving families in Israel as well as what's going on in Gaza, because it's collective punishment, which is against international law. And how can you, I mean, it's massacre. You're massacring the people. If they can't have food and water and medicine, especially food and water, 3 days without water and a person will die. And maybe a week without food and the person will die. I mean, really, how can anyone with any conscience allow that to happen? And Biden, who's lost his son, should especially be aware of the grief of losing family members. I mean, I just am appalled at our own reaction as well. I mean, the bias has always been there, but my God, you don't kill everyone just because without proof, you don't know how it started. You didn't investigate. You just assumed that whatever was said is true, and maybe it is, but those people deserve to be considered. I mean, civilians just should not be, blanket collective punishment.
Yes.
That's against the law.
Well,
of course, it doesn't matter.
You know,
they've broken so many international law that, you know, nobody's going to care, apparently. But there's got to be some compassion for these people.
Yes.
Many of these people don't know what Hamas does. They have no control over anybody. They're just trying to live their lives and survive. So suddenly you're adding elements. And I really think the Israelis want Gaza, frankly. There's gas off the shore. They're probably going to turn it into some kind of resort or whatever if they do some ethnic cleansing and get rid of them. That's what I see. And I'm sorry to say that. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see that. I see that they're going to just the right wing in government right now probably don't care about anything but getting their way. Mm-hmm. So if people on either side get killed, they don't care because they want to have their goals.
Yes, ma'am.
Reach their goals.
Yeah, okay. Let me get a couple of callers. I do want to make one observation. Because you raised a good question. Hamas has not claimed credit, but they will sit back the question for as dense as Gaza is, and it's as difficult as it is to get in and to get out. It would seem to be it originated from someone who was living already or established already in Gaza, and that even though Hamas has not taking credit for it, it's hard to explain how you get that many fighters or soldiers into an area that can penetrate the walls and then kill 1,000 people. If Hamas didn't do it, then they should be saying something as well. But that's a conversation for later on. And from a religious perspective, if the Jewish law says, if it is a religious response, even the worst they say an eye for an eye, but they say 10 eyes for one eye. You know, there's no, even following their law, the revenge often is quite severe. I have a caller here that's
a portion of the crime. They don't follow the law, so they're above the law and they don't follow the law. So their responses are always out of proportion to what's happened.
Definitely.
And because they're responsible for these people, they don't, had they taken care of them according to international law, there wouldn't be this grievance. But they don't, they don't respect them, and the irony is Palestinians never caused any trouble to Jewish people historically. They lived together. The Palestinians were the ancient Canaanites. They've always been in that land. So they're historically, one can't say I was there before the other. They were both there. So it's it's just that there was the kingdom of Judea and Samaria for less than a century, 90 years. That was all it was before it was conquered, and they were conquered. So it's really tragic that they're using religions for in the political arena. It should not. There's no place for a religion in politics. But
no,
Biden
no.
labels himself a Christian Zionist, and others resent, you know,
scary.
You know, Jewish Zionist or whatever. But you know, if we treated people with respect, there wouldn't be fear for anybody, any minority or any majority even. I mean, nobody should be afraid because they're a Jewish or Muslim or Christian or Asian or black or whatever it is. I mean, this country is a melting pot, and we've in the past have you know done so much, contributed so much to our societies, and now I feel like we're withholding from the public. You know, we're just not providing services that we used to provide. We're not taking care of employees the way we used to. The CEOs have these monumental salaries. I mean, the malaise in the society is covering every area of society.
Yes.
I mean, children are affected. There's violence in the schools. There's anger in the right-wing groups. I understand the anger. I really do. On all sides, I understand it, but it does not serve anyone. It has to be addressed in a way that we can solve the problems. And takes time and diplomacy. And that's always a slower process, but it results in wonderful things in the end. I mean, you know, just look at what was created in the early 20th century. So in this country, we achieved so much and provided so much. We had wonderful schools, wonderful societies. I mean, people were, in general, content. We could survive on one salary. Those were the good old days, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
Children were protected. So anyway,
I just have some callers, so I need to get to.
I should go. I just want to thank you for having me, and I pray that all
thank you.
Ends well. And thank you for inviting me. And Lee, thank you for your comments.
You're more
I really
than welcome.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to have a conversation.
Yes. Lee, she had her time. We have a few more callers. She had time to hold on.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay, great. We're going to go to... This is my sister, Hajah. She had her hand up and down. I'm going to take her to what my sister got to say. Sister Hajah, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Just thank you so much for this program. What the sister was saying, I am so fully in agreement with it, and it was so pleasant to hear someone speaking with such balance and understanding. I just wanted to mention Imam Muhammad's definition of diplomacy. I recall his definition being diplomacy is negotiating for better behavior. And I thought that was such a great definition. And I just pray Allah that some people can come to the table using diplomacy, sincere diplomacy. Thank you, Brother Mikhail. Beautiful program.
Thank you.
As-salamu alaykum.
Thank you very much. You're like my son's sister, Zakiya from New Jersey. Okay, we have a few more callers here. And I thank you all for your patience. I'm trying to get everybody in, and if I can. Okay, we're going to go from the East Coast to the West Coast. It's our brother Amin from L.A. As-salamu alaykum, Brother Amin.
Can you hear me?
Kind of. Yeah. You're a little bit faint. You must be on. Well, wait a minute. Are you on speakerphone or Bluetooth? Because you sound faint.
A little faint, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can get the phone in my ear. Hold on here.
Yeah, you come to the phone directly.
Yeah, okay. Maybe this might be a little better.
Yes, it is.
Alhamdulillah. We ask Allah to bless the ones who lost their lives. But my question is, how did the Israelis not know that this was happening? They say this is supposed to be the largest open-air prison in the world. but a concentration of 2.5 million people, 2.5 million people, and the census said earlier, approximately $153 billion have went into Israel. How do they not know? I mean, in this regard, I'm a conspiracy theorist. It's kind of like 9-1-1. People say that someone knew that was going to happen, and when it did happen, it was an excuse for the West to go in and take over Libya and Syria and golly, all the Middle East oil producing countries, and they're threatening Iran just because of that one event. And I just can't figure out who benefits from this. I'm thinking Israel is benefiting from this, but what it is, what are they trying to do? What are they after? You know what I mean? Because there's no way in the world they shouldn't have known.
Yeah, but let's see if he has any thoughts on that. People have asked the question, Israel don't have one of the best security systems in the world. You got the Iron Dome. They have some of the world's top intelligence and all that. How did this happen?
Right. So that's an excellent question. And I just quickly want to – also the first caller talked about diplomacy. I just want to quickly say something about that as well before I answer the question about how did Israel let this happen, right?
Sure.
Absolutely agree with diplomacy is absolutely necessary. I think what I learned in my training in conflict resolution is that whoever the mediator is, they can't have a stake in the outcome, right? So in my opinion, America can no longer serve as a mediator between the Palestinians and the Israelis because America clearly has a stake in this, in the outcome, right? So that's one side of it. And the other is, what the report that came out, the leaked memo from the United States State Department this week, where they said to all their diplomats they were discouraging them from using any language of de-escalation, ceasefire, restoring calm, end violence, bloodshed. So it's from up on top, it's the diplomacy side of it from America's perspective is let this play out, let the war happen, right? And then to the second caller's question, which again is a great, great question, I don't know it. From a conspiracy side, obviously we don't know, right? We don't know, but there are reports that Egypt let Israel know 3 days prior that Hamas was planning something big, okay? So that is a report that is circulating. Now, the legitimacy of that, I can't speak to that. So I don't want to just spread misinformation, but that there is a report that Egypt did let Israel know. And so I think to the other question, the second part of that question is, what do they get out of this, right? What's the goal, right? I think there's a couple things we could look at that could be possible explanations as to what the goal could be in the situation. Why would Israel allow this to happen if they did in fact sort of turn a blind eye to or allow the attack to occur? I know that, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been kind of in some controversies of his own in Israel proper, where they're seeking to delegitimize the democracy of Israel by giving the Supreme Court supreme power. There's been a lot of massive protests in Israel of Israelis calling for his resignation. So it could be a deflect kind of thing if we can keep. We can allow the population to kind of come together against a unified enemy of Hamas. Maybe they'll forget about my misgivings and all my corruption. I don't know. I don't know. But I think there's a lot of things going on the ground that we don't necessarily think about or know much about.
It sounds like you're giving like the wag the dog kind of scenario.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And just for this audience, that's a movie. Wag the dog. He said most times the wag the tail, but they flip the script. The tail is wagging the dog, and it is a ploy used to, if you're in hot water, to divert attention from you you would create a bigger havoc. And so that, I just wanted to get to make that point, clarify that point. But that's a good question that needs to be answered. I'm very much interested to see what the Israeli government or people are going to say over the next year or two as to what caused that breach
right.
in the Israeli army of security, because that's a very good question. Thank you, Brother Amin Muhammad, for the excellent question. Okay, we're going to go on up the line. We've got a couple more callers I want to get to. I had this already. Call from 914. Call 914-434. Thanks for calling Voice Made People. Can you give us your first name and your city, please?
Yes, this is Muhammad calling from Mount Vernon, New York.
This is Brother Muhammad from Mount Vernon. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Well, I guess, well, you see, I lose my voice. And, I only speak for a second, so. Yeah, I think I just have to, I can see my voice is back on. So I want now you to make the comments that I want to make. But thank you for taking my call.
And okay, your voice. Yeah, can you talk a little louder, or you on speakerphone because you're not coming through very clear.
No, I'm not on speakerphone. I'm on my phone, but it's my voice is going. My phone is volume.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll listen closely.
Yeah, just thank you for having this program, and especially the comment that the sister, I think Marian, I believe, that made. Appeal, you know, that, and also the rabbi, it's just so much here that, like I said, it's impossible to imagine that Israel didn't know that this was going to happen. And we haven't heard, we don't hear one side, really. We haven't heard anything from the Palestinians. It's only the Israelis. Side they were hearing. It's a one-sided story, comments and news report that we're getting, it's all one-sided. And those who have interest in America having a vested interest in it, they shouldn't even be part of any type of negotiation. Thank you for taking my comments.
Yeah, no, thank you for calling. And we have been, and others have been as well. I know I told the believers here Friday at service, I said, diversify your radio outlets that you listen to. And there's a couple that I mentioned that may not be very common. One is Al Jazeera. You can go to aljazeera.com and get another perspective. I'm not saying they're saying it all truth. I'm just saying diversify who you listen to. Another one is quite good that I personally recommend would be Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. She tends to give a perspective. And quite interesting, I'm surprised, if I'm not mistaken, I think she's Jewish, but what else outlets that you can share with our listeners so they can tune into telephone or internet that can give different opinions on this same conversation? Do you have any recommendation?
Well, yes. I mean, it's interesting you said Democracy Now! Because that when I was saying earlier, I was waiting all weekend for Monday. That was who I was waiting for. Was for Amy Goodman. They are the work that they do is phenomenal. They also there's another organization called The Intercept with Jeremy Scahill, and Jeremy actually is close colleagues with Amy. They all kind of come from the same school of journalism. He's done a lot of work looking at there's a wonderful documentary that he did. I'm trying to remember the name. I think it's Jeremy Scahill.
What's his last name again?
Scahill, Scahill. And he did a documentary called Dirty Wars. That's what it's called, Dirty Wars. And but he also runs this news organization called The Intercept, and they have a podcast that goes along with it called Intercepted. And they produce just wonderful independent journalism. I would also suggest, Mother Jones, as they are still producing, I think it's 6 physical issues every year. They're really, really strong journalism. There's others. I think you just, again, really just do, I would encourage listeners to do their due diligence and really understand, I really like the Young Turks, but I do know, obviously, they have a slant, more of a progressive slant.
I'm sorry, the last one that you broke up, you said, I really like, and then you broke up.
Oh, I really like the Young Turks. So they're another progressive news organization. Obviously, they have a bias, but as a progressive, I really appreciate what they share. I think Democracy Now! is one of my primary ones. I do like Al Jazeera a lot. Unfortunately, some of the other sources I would trust in the past, I kind of use, or I let what happens with Palestine-Israel kind of serve as a litmus test for how balanced they're going to be. And a lot of the ones in the past that I would have looked to really just fail miserably at balance when it comes to this issue. And also mm-hmm. they're quick to, when America gets involved in any sort of military operation of any kind, even if it's just like as a proxy war situation like in Ukraine, they're very, very pro-war, and that really troubles me. I always wonder, with the shareholders and things like that, who the ultimate question is always who benefits, right? Who seeks to profit off of the X, Y, or Z? And mm-hmm. I look for those news agencies that are only making money off of memberships. They're not getting donations from big donors and stuff like that.
And that's very key. If they get support from big donors, they are not going to disappoint their supporters. Those who advertise with them, they will not say
exactly
anything to lose their bankroll. Have called, I think, Sister Satana again. I think she had another comment, if I'm mistaken. Sister Satana, a follow-up comment?
I sound like you have other callers. If you do, you need to leave me for last.
Huh?
I said if you have other callers, you can leave me for last.
Leave you for last? Why doesn't you? Because we have to keep moving.
You have other people that you want. I want to hear their comments.
Okay,
you have other
right
people
now,
wanting.
No, not right now, but we have some more material to cover, so I can give you a limited amount of time. Go ahead, please.
Okay. All right. The sister said that we are melting pot. We were moving towards being a tossed salad, all right, in this country, okay? The Israelis already was doing things before Hamas took this October 7th thing. They were already doing things. So, yeah. Okay, the next thing is I want to know, all of our tax money is going over there to Israel. They keep spending billions of dollars. And yet, what kind of security? Where did the money go? Because if you have a good security, you shouldn't have had that. All right. The other thing is that when we look at the smallpox blankets that were given to our brothers here in America, it's like the same thing as giving no water to the Palestinians. It's a complete extermination.
Yes, ma'am. Those are the concerns that everything are legitimate. And these, some of this reminds me of gentrification that we complain of here in America, where a new set of people come in to take over what's been long held by one set of people. And there's not much justice. We know the original meaning of gentrification is positive, but its application has been quite disruptive for a long time. Residents. And I think there's something similar going on here. I kind of heard our sister Tutana just now alluded to that. Somebody else alluded to it earlier. I think Mary Ann did. What are the plans after the invasion of Gaza? And they say the invasion of Hamas. What are the plans? Because and also further described on the West Gaza, it's a long, narrow strip. But on the western edge, it's all water.
Right.
And that's about 20, I think they said 26 miles long of
stretch. Yeah, like 25,
And all that's important. Now, water means a lot of things, you know, imports, exports, et cetera.
Right. So they do have, you know, the whole western edge of the Gaza Strip is the coastline. But they, Gazans only have, they could only be in, I think, within 1 to 2 miles of the coastline. If they go beyond that, they are bombed out of the water. So fishing is non-existent, which was a big part of their economy. The blockade on Gaza is not just the wall, but it's also the sea and obviously the air. So yeah, it's you have the ocean, but the ability to not access its resources is almost, it's like being in a desert and looking at, you know, and finding like a mirage, right? It's a mirage of health. It's a mirage, but that's not really there. It's like, here's the ocean, but what can they do with it really, as far as like saving their lives?
Wait, I pause you for a second, please. You said something I didn't know. It's shocking what you just said. The 26 roughly mile stretch of coastline, you're saying that if the Palestinians use that, they would be bombed?
Right. Uh-huh. So they can only be in boats within 1 to 2 miles of the shoreline, and if they go beyond that, the Israeli Navy will blow the ships out of the water. So they have no access to fishing, because with the fishing does not really, it's so shallow, where those 1 to 2 miles, so it's really unusable for any sort of sustenance.
Question, not that we can answer here, but just for the consciousness of the world, how can the world stand by and see the Palestinians in a, and when you say prison, it's an open air prison. They have prison walls around it. But on the water side, they would be bombed if they go out more than 1 or 2 from the coastline. How can Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Syria, the USA, America, how can they sit by quietly, knowing there's 2.2 million people pent up in their situation, and they can't even control gas, light, water, food supply? How can they, with a conscience, say you got 24 hours to leave? You know, and just a little side note here, so we're going to wrap up here. Remember Katrina, and a guy at work asked me. Wait a minute, a guy at work. He asked me. He said, "Well, how come they just didn't leave?" You know, like I say, poor people just don't have the option. Sometimes they have a hard time getting across town, getting to work. So then let's fast forward to Rita, when Rita hit Houston and everyone did try and leave, right? Houston got about 2 million people, and everyone did try and leave. What happened? The people got on the highway, ran out of gas, ran out of medicine. Some people died on the highway. And these are people who have resources trying to leave Houston from Hurricane Rita. How can the world sit by quietly and talk about, well, you know, they shouldn't have done that, knowing these people here have been poor for how long have they been in blockade?
Well, 16 years under the most recent blockade. But the caller was right that even before Hamas won the election in 2006, like I was there in 2005, the week that Israel was disengaging the settlements, they were removing the settlements from Gaza. The conditions were just as bad then. So this goes on beyond, goes way back further and further and further. I think just the last 16 years under the most recent blockade, things have become more concentrated. But to address the question of how can the world look on and watch? I think that's the million-dollar question, right? The only thing I will say, though, is sort of as a caution first before I kind of give my response, is when I see the news of all these massive protests in the Arab world, right? Look and seeing the protests in Egypt or the protests in Jordan, literally up to the border of Israel. Look what's going on in Lebanon. And you see even, you know, obviously Saudi Arabia's involvement in their cooperation with Israel right now. It's a complex thing. But historically, going all the way back to 1948, when the Arab world has gotten involved, meaning going to war with Israel, and the same thing in 67, in my opinion and in my research, the Arab world wasn't fighting on behalf of Palestinians. They were fighting against Israel. And so when they lost and were pushed back, who paid the price? Palestinians did. The war was fought in their yards, but they didn't ask for this, right? And so I get nervous when I see the neighboring states sort of start to like react this way, because I think, again, it's people start to get itchy and they want to fight and they want to fight Israel. And who's going to pay the price for this, though, when it doesn't work out? And that is the Palestinians. So I get nervous about that. But as far as
you made a point. I want you to go a little further if you can, because we need to understand this situation, the complexity. You made a very good point. I think you said, you basically said Saudi Arabia. When they went to war against Israel, they were not really fighting on behalf of the Palestinians. Their main focus was against Israel. But for the Palestinians, for many Muslim countries, let's tell the truth. We talk about telling the truth here. The Palestinians have been a pawn.
Exactly.
In many Muslim countries. We need to bring that out, too, because it's not going to solve it, I know, but at least let's bring some clarity to our listeners. Can you go a little bit further on that? Because there's other countries besides Saudi Arabia who attacked Israel, but they didn't get 2 cents. Let me not say that. They didn't have as much concern about than they pretend to have.
Right, and I think they often use them as sort of the they kind of cash in on the plight of the Palestinians for their own kind of political situation to rally support in their countries. And they can, you know, look like they support the Palestinians. They can have these rallies and protests, but really nothing comes of it. No aid, no attempts at diplomacy, you know, trying to bring Israel to the negotiating table that aren't met with, you know, and again, without their sort of belief, the only solution is that Israel's gone. Like, well, that's a non-starter, right? So it's I don't know. I really struggle with that. But I think the bigger question you were asking, and I think it's important we address it before we end today, is, you know, how does the world, like how does the West specifically, how do we look on? I think if we're telling the truth, and this is painful to say this, is I think it'd be ignorant to not acknowledge that we're talking about brown people and we're talking about Muslims specifically. And in the West, we don't have a good track record with how we interact with people of color and how we interact with people of faith differing than traditional, you know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. And so I think that if you look at why then as America, why do people on the left so support our support of Ukraine when they won't support what's going on with Palestine? And I don't know. I think it's really hard to not look at the fact that Ukrainians are basically a version of European. And for a lot of Americans, in their mind, they look like me, right? There's that sort of, I can relate to that because they look like me. Whereas then you look at what happens with Palestinians, like, well, they don't look like me. They don't speak like me. They don't worship like I do. Right. So in their mind, I'm not saying this is right. I'm trying to understand it myself is, well, if you don't look like I do, you don't worship like I do, and you don't speak like I do, and you dress differently than I do, then we have nothing in common. Why should I care about your plight? But also you're asking, why do people in the West, why do they not care about their even Palestinian Christian neighbors, right? So we have the Palestinian Christian community who now make up less than 1% of the population in Palestine, Israel. But You know, so why don't Christians in the West care about their situation? And, you know, I think we have to look at the fact that America in general are very we're a very isolationist kind of society. When we don't know the name of our own next door neighbor, typically most Americans don't, why would we expect them to care about then someone literally on the other side of the world who, even if they pray like they do, they still don't look like I do, they still don't speak like I do, right? So I don't know. I think there's a lot of answers to the question, but I think we have to look at that.
Yes, yes. Okay. I have a caller here being quite patient. I think I overlooked them. I think caller from 347. You're on Words Made People. Can you give us your first name and city, please?
Yes, that's Mr. Mohassan, and I'm from the New York area. And I'm very grateful, let me say, before I ask my question and make my comment, kudos go, great graciousness goes to the CEO of AM360, Sister Latifa, who I called on that simulcast number, but didn't realize that you couldn't see my hand when I pushed one to come in and make a comment.
Yes,
she was so perfect as to call me and ask me to call in on your direct number so my hand could be seen. So I really love her.
Yeah, thank you, because you are reminding me of an announcement I'm supposed to have made from the beginning. That today we're working in conjunction with AM360. We are on station IWDM, and we are teaming up with our brothers and sisters from station AM360. And so we are simulcasting today, and we are glad to welcome everyone from AM360 for being with us. And we thank Sister Latifa Hameen for her dedication to bring us closer and closer together. Thank you for reminding me to make that announcement. Go ahead, please, with your comment.
No problem, Imam Sahir. And I want to thank you for this phenomenal program. I am executive producer and former host on AM360. So we share the same commitment to information, knowledge, and this dispelling of ignorance, which one of your guests just mentioned as a huge drawback in the information that we share and we are access to from media, and therefore we don't have, through the problems in media, a comprehensive concept of the truth as it actually exists. And often our perceptions are colored by the amount of false information that can be distributed through the news media. I'm not faulting the news media as a whole, but there are strategic efforts, we're aware, being made to misguide and misinform.
That's true.
So
that's true.
You've been wonderful. I'm going to extend what I'm saying because I waited so long. But anyway, your guests have been tremendously informing our community and our listeners. And I was in tears most of the time that I don't know her name, your female guest, because of the high criteria of rationale and logic that she applied to understand what was really, to broaden our understanding and perception of the reality of what's really going on. And the other guests that you have, both of them, have been extremely enlightening to us, waking us up that there may be something going on that we simply don't have the awareness of.
Make a fair point. It's a fair point. It just dawned on me that my guest today was, one was a Muslim, one was a Christian, one was a Jew. It just dawned on me. But it came from following good advice of Imam Muhammad, and he tells us to get involved with the interfaith community. And, you know, in the Quran tells us, you know, go talk to those different religions. You know, if you have a question about what the Quran says, the ground says, go talk to the people of the book, is how it says. And so I'm not taking credit. And I mean, I'm humble and I thank you. But it came from us to join the
boys
for like minds.
And we're obligated. Like, one of the things that strengthened my faith in Al-Islam is the Imam emphasizing how self-obligated we are to exercise, function, think, and practice the principles of Al-Islam, our standards of living. So when we seek to do that, Allah opens a way to enlighten us and guide us to the best. So I do a ton of religious, comparative religion. In fact, I had been invited, and I do conduct a class at the senior facility where I live on Quranic studies. And the administration invited me to do that. And I have to say, I'm the only practicing Muslim in this facility, right? But there was so much interest just by the social relationships that I have built, and the population, the residents have, you know, we interact with each other, we speak, we treat each other like neighbors, and it expanded their curiosity. Well, Mahasin, what is your life? You know, so I encourage all of us, regardless of the religious choosing that we have, to interact with each other based upon our consummate faith in one Creator, one God. And last question, very important. How should we access a replay of this wonderful program if we want to review it and have it grant us power and understanding?
Great. Good question. If you have the link that I sent out, the link would be connected forever with this program. And most times when you send the phone number out, we put the link along with it, because you can come back next week, next year even, and give that link a click. It will take you to this program. A second way to find this program, if you're on Facebook, go to my Facebook page. Michael McHale Sahir, that's the name of my Facebook page. And you can just you have to go, and you can do a search on my page and put in this topic. The topic being the Israeli-Palestine saga of innocent blood on guilty hands. You can find it. A third way, just go to Google and type in Words Made People, Michael Sahir, put in Israeli-Palestine, Palestine, the Israeli-Palestine saga, and you should be able to find it with a Google search. So those are three ways. And the fourth way, just give me a call, and I help you to find it as well.
And do you have a direct number?
Everybody knows it anyway, so I don't mind telling it to the world. My number is 317. 753-3754. Again, 317-753-3754. And if I don't answer, I'm probably busy. Just leave me a message or a text.
Okay. And last thing that I want to say, and this is so we can, you know, Allah says when we are grateful, He will give us more. That's a Quranic principle. I'm going to suggest, as a part of the strategic planning area of AM360, that we develop a prize-winning concept where we can recognize and reward programs of this caliber. You know, like they have different prizes in the area of media and literature excellence, because you have consistently established a high caliber of information sharing with our audiences.
Yes, thank you very much.
And we want to honor and commend you. Amen. All right, I'm out.
Amen.
Now,
thank you very much. Okay, Sister Mahasa from New York. I guess we remind, this is October marks our 11th year. This is our anniversary month, October. Okay. Thank you, Sister Mahasa. We did not talk about the map. In 1946, the map was called Palestine, of this particular country. In 1947, with the UN partition, the British mandate and all that, to give the Jewish community a homeland, a little bit more than half, about half of the country was given to Israel and a half to Palestinians. Due to other conflicts, wars, settlements, Jewish settlements taking Palestinian land, is almost the entire country is the Jewish state, and very little is left for the Palestinian people.
Right.
Do you have any comments over this 46 by 75 year change?
I would encourage viewers to try to find maps that really show, like you just brought up, the kind of a timeline of when you look at that, you can really see the shrinking, right? The Palestinian side shrinking. Often, depending on the source, the most current will still show kind of like the 1967 border for Palestine. It looks kind of like a kidney bean. Unfortunately, though, that's not accurate because, as you brought up, the settlement. So it's what's happening right now in the West Bank specifically is you have these illegal, and I say illegal not because I just don't like them, but because even in the international community and the United Nations, they are deemed illegal. You have these settlements that are popping up. And what they'll do is they're annexing more and more parts of the West Bank. So that wall that we've all talked about today, it keeps getting moved further and further and further in towards, kind of claiming more and more land. What they'll do is they'll build these settlements, and then they'll build a road that has walls around it that only settlers can access. And so the land keeps getting divided and cut up. And even like Marianne brought up, farmers who's, they're – the very crops they depend upon for their livelihood, that's on the other side of the wall. And usually what happens is they're only allowed access maybe once a week on a certain time. And then they'll show up and a lot of their trees have been uprooted or burned, some sort of retaliation, things like that. So yeah, the map is shrinking. The question always comes up is.
When you say the map is shrinking for who?
For the Palestinians, right. So their side is shrinking dramatically, because even if that border still shows up on a map as the 1967 border, or even the border that was brought up in the 93 Oslo Accords, the settlements are claiming more of that land and cutting that land up of the West Bank. So the Palestinians' land is being cut up to where they can't access, even to travel around within the West Bank. You're stopped at so many checkpoints, sometimes moving checkpoints that are just, you come down a road and there's an Israeli military vehicle with a couple concrete cinder block or big concrete blocks that they use as a barrier, and they've, machine gun nests, things like that, and you have to wait in line. I mean, I was stuck at the Abu Holi checkpoint in Gaza for 27 hours, and that is the main checkpoint that separates the north from the south, and we had gone down to the southern part of Gaza to Rafah, which at that time was the most devastated area, which is the right next to the Egyptian border. We had gone down to do work, and we took a tour of the an orphanage, and that's when we were fired upon by the Israeli snipers. There's these sniper towers all throughout the Gaza Strip, and when I say that, they're not just around the wall, but they are situated throughout the Gaza Strip to where there's not a single square inch of the Gaza Strip that those towers can't see. And so we were touring the orphanage. It's called, run by a Catholic NGO called SOS. And they did not like us being there, so they were firing into the compound. We were, basically having to, get to cover and then get to, we were down there and we tried to return to Gaza City to our headquarters, and the Abu Holi checkpoint was closed. And we were told at that time, oh, yeah, sometimes it closes for 9 months. I'm like, wait, what? Well, we have to get to the north. And so we ended up, our vehicle did have documentation as being part of Norwegian People's Aid, but we were off to the side with two UN vehicles who are there to kind of document the disengagement of the settlements that week, where they were always there, but they were specifically on that mission. And then two Doctors Without Borders vehicles were there as well for the same reasons. And we were kind of off to the side. Meanwhile, you know, tens and thousands of Palestinians on the south side of the checkpoint needed to get to the north, and vice versa, people in the north needed to get south. And we were there all day into the night, and we knew that it was not safe for us to be there. So we actually sort of retreated back to Khan Yunis, where we stayed at a hostel for the evening, and then the morning came back and kind of resumed our place in line waiting, and had, you know, I had to make some straight to the military commander at the checkpoint in order to kind of negotiate an opening of the checkpoint and use some interesting tactics to make that happen. And yeah, 15 minutes later that was open, but it was closed for 27 hours then. And that's nothing compared to what they deal with all the time. So, you know, when everything's shrinking and the checkpoints are there to kind of enforce this sort of, police state all the time. There's no free movement. There's no access to resources. Like when we think about the ability to go to see a friend for lunch, and it's, if you look on the map and GPS tells you, oh, it's a 15 miles away, and it's going to take you in traffic about 25 minutes. Well, that 15-mile drive in the West Bank could take you 6 hours, depending on, you know, which way you go. It's just, so you never know, right? And so I think there's a lot of things we take for granted. Ease of movement is one of them, and obviously access to resources is another.
Yes, sir. Well, I hope we can, and this is just one program, and they have a listen audience and a following, but it's nowhere near big, we're close to the big media outlets, but maybe some of our voice decisions on both sides. We do have an issue on both sides of the table, and let's just admit that. The leadership on both sides should do a lot better. And that includes our leadership here in the USA of America. My homeland, I'm born and raised here. I love the country, but we have to do better. There's too much rhetoric on both sides. And quit only criticizing the Palestinian side and always praising or closing the eye to the wrong of the Israeli side. That is not going to solve the problem. I also have shared this here with some of my interfaith friends, including rabbis that were there. If you surround, if they've already done, and invade and demolish, as they say they're going to do, Gaza, you're only going to create more terrorists. That's all you're going to do. You're not going to, if you don't change the thinking, the ideologies, the message that's in people's heads, you are not going to solve the problem. I compared it, Leif. I compared them. I said going into Gaza is like going to the ocean and trying to get rid of starfish. You may recall they had an incident someplace in history. They were tired of all the starfish, so they cut them up and threw them back in the water. And if you know starfish, even though they cut up, they will reproduce themselves. So you think you're getting rid of the starfish. You think you're getting rid of terrorists by doing this. In actuality, you're killing someone's father, someone's uncle, someone's brother. Not to mention innocent babies and women and children. You're only going to create more terrorists in doing this. We need a change of thinking in the leadership and a change of thinking in the minds of the people on both sides. And quit playing like it's only the Palestinians acting up, because the history testifies strongly otherwise. But the Israeli government has allowed to happen to Palestinians. Even this past year during Ramadan, the Muslims praying Ramadan during the night prayers, and then more than once the soldiers would come into the mosque while the Muslims in prayer line praying and begin to shooting rubber bullets and setting off fireworks to disrupt the Muslims trying to practice their religion. Those things don't make the news. So we need a change. And Brother Leaf, Sister Mary Ann, I know she had to go. Rabbi Lou, you sincerely for this conversation today. It means quite a bit. We do have an announcement from our sister, Shakira, as well. Leaf, I'd like to hear anything you want to say that's on your mind, your heart, you want to say. Please share with us anything that you want to share.
Well, I just wanted to thank you. You know, as all the callers have said, you know, this is just such a wonderful program, and I appreciate that you seek out different voices and you have a platform that lets people share, you know, different perspectives. That really means a lot. And I think that's what obviously the world is in such desperate need of right now. So I really want to thank you for the opportunity to come on your program today. It's been a real honor of mine to participate. So thank you so much for the invitation.
No, it's my honor, my pleasure. Know you and also your brother and your father as well. You know, we do a lot of good things together here in central Indiana. God willing, we'll continue to do more.
Inshallah.
Inshallah. We depending on how things go in the next few weeks, I may have to have you back soon because this is a very serious moment. We need serious prayer. We need serious voices. We cannot sit on the sidelines and be quiet.
Yes. I would love to come back. Yeah.
Yes, because there's been thousands of innocent people murdered in the way it's looking. And it really bothers me that my country, America, is being quiet, therefore being part of the problem, knowing that thousands of innocent people, mosques, hospitals, are going to be totally destroyed in the next few days. And our government is giving consent to it. That is a big problem for me.
We're writing the check, yep.
Yes, you are. You're writing the blank check, and giving the right to Israel. That's not right. And I see that and all Jews are not in support of invading. They're not. So we cannot do blanket condemnations. Never do blanket condemnations saying all the Jews. You don't know all the Jews. You know, so.
Right. Yeah, the difference between the state of Israel and the Jewish people, right. Yeah, it's the chasm is wide between the majority of the Jewish people and the state of Israel, right.
That's true. That's true. Well, we thank you very much. God willing, God, peace be with you. We say, assalamu alaikum. We're going to go
alaykum
to our
assalam.
Thank you, sir. We go to our announcement from Sister. I think this is her number here. Sister Shakira, are you on?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
Yeah. Alaykum assalam.
Yes, it was a great blessing.
Yeah, you have a wonderful program, an annual program coming up.
Yes,
so,
sir. If I can quickly just make a yes, sir. If I can quickly just make a comment about the program, that is very, and may Allah continue to bless you with the openness, and that's what my announcement is about. It's about the foundation, but we have a little motto that says, "Proper education will solve all our problems," and that's what we need. Mm. Now to solve these different situations that's going on is to have that proper education. So we are getting ready to celebrate, have our 28th annual Investing in Our Future fundraiser. And it will be next Saturday, the 21st. Next Saturday, the 21st.
Mm-hmm.
At John Connor's Fellowship Hall, and it's going to be from 6 to 9 p.m.
In Chicago.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, please mention the city.
And it's in Chicago, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so doing this annual fundraiser, Invest in Our Future, we honor unsung heroes. And if I have time, I would like to read a little bit about that. The Jihad Bashir Support Foundation dedicates its annual Investing in Our Future fundraiser to some unsung heroes. Each one is given to the future his or her own unique life. God created us to have different talents, different roles, just as each entity of the human body, heart, brain, arm, legs, eyes, fingernails, eyelashes, and skin, etc., has a very important job to play in making the human body operate properly. So does each human soul. Whether we be a scientist, artist, caregiver, home provider, lawyer, entrepreneur, each of us contributes to make the one human family operate properly. These unsung heroes work untiringly, supporting their family and community. They may never be, quote, unquote, famous or celebrities, known by the society as a whole. However, they are giants, and this foundation honors them and will always respect him. May Allah continue to his blessings, his mercy, and grant the peace and the prosperity that only he can give to them. So that's us honoring our unsung heroes, doing the
yes,
investing
ma'am.
In our future fundraiser and listening to the program where we have those people that are quietly doing things, and we support all the good, and we are encouraging the American people and us that if we can help one person, if each one of us help one person, then
mm-hmm.
we'll be a great deal to help this. And America, I tell people, is a beautiful country, but like anything, you have to work to help keep your home clean, your environment
mm-hmm.
clean. And so that's what we concentrate on with the Jihad Bashir Support Foundation. This past April, we set up a new scholarship in honor of Imam Muhammad. It would be a $10,000 scholarship, and it would go to some of the family members that display certain qualities, and also young people, students who display a want to be able to impart the knowledge Imam Muhammad gave, the wisdom he had given us. So that's also one thing we're doing. And one of his grandsons had gotten the scholarship this past April, so we're going to be doing that, God willing. So the knowledge that he impart, that we make sure is continued and carried on, and not the wisdom or the knowledge someone else has given us, but he, Allah blessed him to give us a saving force to establish
yes,
that which Prophet Muhammad had. And so we support that which Imam Muhammad gave us. So the Gagan,
yes,
the fundraiser, I know it's out of town, but if people donate a dollar, we always say that, like with Mary McLeod Mathune, build an institution, a college that still exists today. Started in 1800,
yes,
and she did it with $1.
Yes,
sir.
Let me ask a couple of questions. How can someone send a donation? But before you answer that, you said this is the 28th.
The 21st.
Banquet.
Oh, yes, sir. 28th.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
How many students?
No, it's the 28th. I'm sorry. It's the 28th.
Yes, ma'am. So how many students have you helped over the 28 years for scholarships?
Oh. Well, it's been quite a few students. Recording that we have given nearly $300,000 in college scholarships. We also have given at least 300 students an incentive scholarship to if they're interested in the science and the arts. Now, not only do we give out scholarships, we are support organization. So we support the good that people are doing. If we see them, we support. And no matter whether they're in Chicago, wherever, you know, we support the best we can to do that. I was blessed doing the Black History, I mean, some Black Women Expo. I don't know if people across the country, but it's a big, I guess it's conference. We did, I work with an organization that do totally positive productions, that they help young people, you know, with the arts, and they mainly do spoken words, but they've done a lot of things throughout the years. And so they invited me to be part of their seminar on...
So how can... because we have to wrap things up, please.
Okay.
How can people contact you, please?
Oh, okay. So the best way to contact me is 773-651-4609. On that number, we'll tell you, I will answer, or it'll tell you how you can donate. Like I said, whatever amount people can donate, it's a, we support things. We give out scholarships, and so you, that's the best way you can. 773-651-4609. And we thank you, Imam Mikhail, for allowing us to make this announcement and continue.
Sure.
May Allah continue to bless you with words make people. Thank you.
Thank you. You have a website?
No, sir.
No website, okay. Thank you. That was Sister Shakira Bashir from Chicago. Scholarship in honor of her son, Jihad. 28 years of diligent work, faithful work. You can see the success that she's been able to achieve. So I think that's it for our program today. I see hands raised up. I'm not sure if they are, have already spoken or not. I'm not really sure. I'm going to take call 914-434. Your own words make people. You have a comment? Is Brother Muhammad?
Yes, it's Brother Muhammad. Yes, in the answer here. Excuse me. Yeah, I'm glad that you did mention it in advance when you closed out on the program of the situation, Israel's situation.
Hello?
And one thing you do know, and you mentioned 1946 when that decision was made. It's in the Jews to the Palestinian land. So that'll take us back to the intent. What was the intent that we haven't spoke on?
Yes, sir.
What was the intent when they made that decision to send the Jewish people to the Palestinian land? What was the intent? And now we are looking at the intent. This is why they keep going on, because it was, that was the intent to take away the Palestinians' land. They
yes,
had
sir.
All this, the whole America, look at all this land that's in America. They could have chosen a city, a state, Nevada, or California. Many places they have chosen to give the Jewish people land and gave them all the resources, all the support and everything they need established in a whole land, in a whole country,
yes,
if necessary. And we know they have those military Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, that there'd be a roles and military base and all that. They could have did that in probably less than 7 days. They could have built up a whole town, a whole city in America for the Jewish people rather than take the Palestinian land. So that's why we're going to the intent. This is corruption
yes,
that's come about.
Well, that's a word. That's a word I've been telling people to look up. The word is Levant. Levant. It's spelled L-E-V as in Victor, A-N-T. And that's a word that's in the background of a lot of this conversation. And that represents a region, not just one country, not just Israel, Palestine. It includes Syria, plus Jordan, plus of Arabia, the Cyprus Island, and all that. And it goes back to the book of Genesis. There's a connection with Abraham being told to leave his father's house and God carried him to this particular area and told Abraham to look, out there. What is all that land is to be yours for your seed, for your generations to come. And so there's a understanding that it's not only a attention to get the land in Israel, but that we see on this one map, there's a belief in many people's minds that all that land belonged to the Jewish people. And so there may be a further expansion or a land grab, if you will, for all those countries, including Jordan, Syria, and all that. They believe that God made a real estate deal with Abraham, the prophet Abraham, who knows how many thousands of years ago, and said, all this land is yours. And they still see that as being true. Many Christians think all that land belongs to the Jews, but it didn't say to the Jews. It said this land belonged to the children of Abraham. But Abraham had a whole lot of children. According to what the Bible says, it's as numerous as the stars in the sky. But for some reason, it's being now just only the Jews only. And then just another point of history, or just for and put into your thinking cap. Abraham was not a Christian, nor a Jew. The Quran says this. The Quran is very clear. Abraham was not, see, they're arguing about something. They don't even know what they're arguing about. Because Abraham was not a Jew, nor was he a Christian, but he was a Hanifa Muslim man. He was an upright Muslim. That's what the Quran says. Now, the Jewish community did not come. It went through the Abraham's seed. It led to Isaac and Jacob, to their lineage. Jacob, later in his life, after a particular incident, his name was changed from Jacob to Israel. So then Israel was not introduced in the Bible language until long after Abraham. Abraham had already got the promise. Israel was nowhere on the scene until Jacob, after they said he wrestled with the angel or wrestled with God, depending on one verse said he wrestled with the angel all night, and one verse said he wrestled with God all night long. And when he got done, he had a limp, but his name was changed from Jacob to Israel. Okay, now, then later on, one of the sons from that was named Judah. J-U-D-A-H, again, J-U-D-A-H, and that's where you get Judaism from. Well, that's a long after Abraham had received that real estate deal from God. But and they want to just say it only belongs to this particular branch and say it all just belongs to the Jewish people. Well, dear people, that's problematic for a number of reasons. We don't have time to go into it now. But the Quran answers the question. They say Abraham was a Christian or a Jew. He wasn't. He was an upright Muslim man, and that's saying an upright person. A Muslim means that an upright person who follows the will of God. So keep those thoughts in mind. The word Levant, L-E-V-A-N-T, and that the names Israel and Judaism came long after Abraham was here on earth. Just keep that in mind. Okay, we're going to
go. So here, give us that the sound of that word again, Levant.
Levant. L, S in Larry. E, S in Edward. V, S in Victor. A, S in F. N, S in Nancy. T, S in Thomas. And that
thank you.
Describing, I haven't counted them, but four or five, six countries. And all they belong to the seed of Abraham. So, and that's, then that could be another problem for generations to come. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to close out with a talk. Imam Abdi Muhammad being interviewed by Tony Brown. I'm not sure the year of this interview, but Imam Muhammad, he's explaining to Tony Brown what the term jihad means. It does not mean holy war. And the man, he explains plainly about the concept of terrorism. And he gives the clear understanding. So with that said, I thank you Thank you to my special guests, Leif Carson, Mary Ann Spaday, and Rabbi Weiss. And I thank you, my wonderful listeners, and for your beautiful, intelligent questions. All praise be to God. Please enjoy this interview of Imam Muhammad. You will learn quite a bit.
Please help us understand jihad. Jihad in English means religious war.
Yes. That meaning has been given to it by circumstances, by wars, by fighting. The original meaning of jihad is to struggle with your life, to make your life conform to what God wants of you, according to what's in our holy book and in the life tradition of our prophet Muhammad, the 7th century prophet. The first jihad in Islam is the struggle within yourself to keep out bad influences, to keep out bad thoughts, etc., so that you remain for God, peaceful, obedient, respecting your fellow man, his rights, his life, etc., and respecting God, of course. Then jihad also is in the public, to carry that struggle out into the public, to be an influence in the public, to bring the public life to conform to what God wants. And the jihad goes for war, too, also. When you're at war, God says, struggle with your souls, with your wealth, and with your own souls, with your own persons, or with your own souls, in the path of God, in the path of God. Fi sabilillah, this is not the path of the world, it's the path of God. So if we let worldly spirit rule us when we are fighting, even when we are at war, we are not fit as soldiers, as Muslim soldiers, we are not fit. The spirit of God's word should be always prevailing in us over the spirits of the world. So if something bids me hate or injuries caused to me or to my family or to my people or to my nation, cause me to act out of bitterness and to fight in the spirit of bitterness, then I'm not fit as a Muslim soldier. We are told in our holy book that we are not to allow the hatred of a people to influence us to bad conduct or to do wrong and swerve from doing what is just. This is the word of God. This is not me saying this. I'm quoting our holy book. So that tells us that no matter what circumstances are in the world, we are still to obey God and conduct ourselves in a way that is acceptable in the presence of God.
Even when a Muslim has been done wrong by someone else, when a Muslim is angry about his or her own social and economic situation, there's nothing in the Holy Book, the Quran, that gives a Muslim the right to be aggressive, to take a life, or to take his or her own life. Is that accurate?
Yes. God tells us never be the aggressor. Never be the aggressor. But to retaliate, to respond to what has troubled you and made your life miserable or attacks upon your life, certainly we are authorized and justified in doing that. However, there is a conduct imposed upon us by God, no matter what the situation is. It can be heated war, violent war, physical war. Still, we have to conform to what God asks of us. And the prophet taught the believers, he said they were at war, and they were not the aggressors. They were. Prophet Muhammad was so peaceful and so much interested in giving the message of Islam to the world that he took a lot of abuse. Once he was rejected by the people of Taif, the mountain area, rich area in Saudi Arabia, and they didn't accept his message, and they rejected him very harshly. And as he was leaving that mountain area, it is recorded in history by Maududi, Muslim, and Bukhari, the two authorities for recording history of Prophet Muhammad. is recorded there that blood could be heard in his sandals as he was walking. They could hear the blood in his sandals as he walked away. And he did not come back, try to get an army to come back and destroy Tyre.
Did they physically attack him?
Yes, they threw stones at him. Mostly little children were throwing the stones, but some adults also.
His body was bleeding.
Yes, and the blood was in his sandals, running down into his shoes, sandals, and was making the swishing sound in his sandals. And he never said, now let's take care of those people. Now I have a strong army. Let's go and take care of Tyre.
Well, they deserve what I'm going to do to them.
Yeah, they deserve what I'm going to do.
Is there any... Well, what's wrong? Let me just hypothetically say that.
Yes.
What's wrong with being a wrongdoer? What would happen to a Muslim if a Muslim went against the laws of the Quran and wanted to destroy all Jews or wanted to destroy all non-Muslims?
He'd be going against the Quran. You can't do that and be a Muslim.
Now, so that would make you a non-Muslim.
Yes, you can't consciously do that and be a Muslim because the Quran says there are an example or a party among the Jews and among the Christians who promote fair dealings and righteousness for mankind. And the same is required of Muslims. And God said, let you be a people promoting fair dealing and righteousness for mankind. So if we say all Jews are condemned, we're going against our holy book. And our holy book even goes further to say, God says, whoever is a believer in God and the last day and believe in being accountable to God, he has no fear. He should have no fear, nor should he grieve.
Do you have...
His reward is with God, with his Lord.
All right. Now, I want to move to another topic. And I received an email that I'm going to read from a man in Torrance, California. And I think this is a challenge for you and for people like you who can help us understand. And I think it comes from a point of view that many people hold, Americans. Perhaps they won't admit it in public, but a lot of this is misconception, and I would like for you to respond to it. I'd like to read you just one sentence that I wrote to set it up, and this is what I wrote. I'm not quoting the man yet. This is me. Mindful that 6 million Muslims, 3 million or 50% of whom are African Americans, live in the United States, President Bush, in the wake of the death of 6,000 innocent Americans at the hands of extremists, advised that we should avoid describing terrorists as, quote, Islamic. President Bush said, quote, the people who did this act on America and who may be planning further acts are evil people. They don't represent an ideology. They don't represent a legitimate political group of people. They're flat evil, end of quote. Mm-hmm. And that attack, and he went on to say, those attacks had nothing to do with Islam. In this email from a man, I said, from Torrance, California, he offers the following history, analysis, and challenge to the American Muslim community. I'd like to read a paragraph at a time, and I'd like for you to respond in any way you'd like. This is his first paragraph. Quote, true Islam, we are told by modern American Muslims, means submission to God. It is a religion of peace, equality, and tolerance. Typical was a Muslim doctor in Los Angeles, in the Los Angeles Times, when he said that the September 11 attacks were, quote, insane crimes, which have, quote, nothing to do with any religion, and it has nothing to do with Islam. The teaching of Islam is totally against violence. That's what a Muslim doctor said. Another Times article informs, quote, Muslims don't proselytize, and they, the terrorists, are not practicing Islam. Islam is a peace-loving religion. That's what another point of view. Mm-hmm. We're also informed that the concept of jihad, struggle or holy war for Allah is really a personal war for self-mastery, having nothing to do with waging war against others. In sum, we're being told that the alleged hijackers were not true Muslims, but deranged and aberrant members of some fringe cult foreign to Islam. And I'm sure you agree with all of that. You've said that one word.
Yes, yes, yes. Identifying Muslims, what Muslims are. We have extremists in Islam, but most of the extremists in Islam that we accept as religious personalities, those extremists were mystics, and they took mysticism to the extreme. I don't think anywhere I can find any support for including those who have mentalities like Hitler, Adolf Hitler had, or persons who killed innocent to get attention to their cause among those extremists. So when we say extremists, we're talking about extremists in mysticism and not extremists in conduct, in human conduct or human behavior. Extremists in human behavior are condemned. They are not accepted as Muslims. So regardless of what the person who's writing these, saying these things, has in his mind, I know for a fact that Islam must be always accepted and cannot be accepted any other way as a religion of peace, a religion of diplomacy, which we may say tolerance, and respect for others, and it is a religion of human excellence, human excellence. So this religion forbids that I not respect my own good human nature. It says, can I speak a little Arabic maybe?
Please.
Okay. For those who are in the audience, they understand Arabic. Allah, God says, Bismillahirrahmanirrahim, in our Quran, God says that this religion is deen al-fitratu lati fatra nasa alayha. He said, this, your religion, when it was established through Muhammad, God announced that this is your religion, is religion patterned on the original pure pattern of human being, of the human being, his original human nature, innocence. We believe in the innocence of man, that man is born innocent, though in sin, in a world of sin he's born, but he's born, his own essence are innocent and pure, innocent and pure. Every baby born anywhere, any country, to any nation, is born innocent and pure. This is what we believe. And what God is telling us, that your religion respects the purity of your creation that God gave you, and it's made to complement that. It is put upon that pattern. So if my human nature, if something bothers me in my heart, I'm to respect that. Muhammad said, if you don't know the law or the commandment, anything from your religion to give you the what you need to make a decision. If what you're considering wavers and just keeps bothering you inside, leave it go. Leave it go. So it bothers me to see a baby killed. Not to mention the many that was killed when their suicide bombers hit the World Trade Center.
Everyday trying to do things their own way, but everything you see, touch, smell, those are things that tell you words to think twice before you step or give advice. Make sure your words hold true, cause people hold you to your words that make people and people that make the world go round. Words make people. World. If your words are jive, then jive you are, cause those type of words, they don't go far. Think and start, words come by, from ideas deep in your mind. It's words that make people, and people, that make the world go round. Words make people, check out the words that make your mind. words that make your world. If your words are good, then good you'll be, cause those got no words that set you free. When thinking starts, words come back from ideas deep in your mind. You need words to make people, and people to make the world go round. Words that make people. Thank you, WD, for setting me free with words.
You need words to make people.